Welcome to the Title League Podcast. I'm Kurt.
And I'm Trish.
And today we're joined by first team Pac-12, Eugene Omorui, Toronto native from Nigeria via Orangeville Prep to Rutgers University and now Oregon, where he has just finished up March Madness. They had an exit in the Sweet 16, but he has entered his name into this year's 2021 NBA draft.
So what's the deal? What's going to happen here? Do we know? Is there any, you know, what are the boards saying? What's he saying? How well do we think he's going to do?
You know, he is a strong, talented individual. He plays the three, so the small forward, but he's 6'6", so a little bit maybe undersized for those that look at it that way. But, you know, I don't think he's undersized. He's really, really just a tough, tough guy. The other obstacle that he may face, which I really don't think is an obstacle, is he's 24 years old. You know, most guys that are in the lottery are, you know, they're being drafted based on potential and upside, and they're 19, 20. Him being 24, the advantage is he's got an NBA-ready body, and he's a grown man.
Yeah. It's fun. It's interesting, you know, this show, doing this show for over a year now has taught me so much and things that I never really thought about before. But again, you know, we have our favorite team is living proof that the draft isn't the be-all and end-all when it comes to a career in basketball. And undoubtedly, the best player in the league currently is showing us that age isn't really relevant in basketball anymore either. So I think it's a whole new game, definitely a different game than I watched growing up, and different players. So it's going to be super interesting to see how Eugene does and what happens in his professional career.
You know, he only started playing basketball in the 10th grade. He played soccer coming from Nigeria and then growing up in Toronto. Soccer was his preference, but he went to Orangeville Prep. Obviously, we've got a connection there with Mr. Jesse Tipping, and he was on the team that played with Jamal Murray and Thon Maker. So, you know, I want to find out what that dynamic was like. He was obviously still trying to come into his own. What do you think?
I think, you know, let's go to the first part of that statement where he played soccer first. And you know, we are a country that's made up of immigrants. And the world sport is soccer. You don't need much. You need a ball, and that's it, and your feet. And so it doesn't matter where you come from in the world. It doesn't matter what your economic class is. Soccer is a universal sport. So it has been the sport of Canada as we grow in immigration, right? So, and I think what's telling is how many stories we hear of people who start out as soccer players, or the two sports are coincided. And basketball is really becoming Canada's sport. We are coming into our own, which, you know, makes sense, because in basketball you only need a ball too and your hands. but it doesn't seem as accessible, or it didn't seem as accessible as it has seemed in the last 10, 15 years.
You know, he's born in 97. I'm born in 89. It's crazy now to think about these younger guys that I'm almost 10 years apart from. But
are we giving birth dates? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, we're giving birth dates. But the reason I say that is
I'm born
when
in 1990.
When I was coming up in Toronto, the basketball scene was really just...
Scott, you can cut that out. The look on Scott's face. I'm sorry when I gave the wink to the camera. I'm sorry. Yes.
When I was coming up, the basketball scene in Toronto was really... it was coming up. We had the Eastern Commercers, the Father Henry Carrs, the Joseph Brothers at Pickering. It was, you could definitely feel this level of just boiling point. It was about to boil over. The floodgates were about to open. And he talks about growing up in Rexdale and, you know, his love of basketball coming where he would attend these Father Henry Carr games and the atmosphere, just the competitiveness in those gyms. And Father Henry Carr is obviously a powerhouse that has been part of the culture in Toronto and Canadian basketball, with guys like Dylan Brooks coming out of there and so many others. So to hear him talk about that, I remember being in the gym watching Father Henry Carr in the office of championship with Pickering and DeVoe and Corey going up against these guys, and I can relate to a lot of that. So that's where it started. And then, you know, we didn't have the Orangeville Preps when I was around, so I had to go to the U.S. So it's also amazing to see how far we've come. The Raptors winning a championship has been monumental in really driving this force. And Canada basketball's in a pretty healthy place.
We are, and I actually think, you know, and maybe this is something that I should have thought of earlier, but this is a thought that's just come to me. When you talk about the Toronto basketball scene, it's like you're speaking a whole other language. It's like you're in a whole other country, not just another city in the world. And I wonder, too, how much that is rooted in the fact that there is a professional basketball team based out of Toronto. And if other cities in Canada would have that connection and that growth and that drive if we had a professional team to aspire to. And I think about, you know, the comparison of hockey, and when we talk about hockey here, there are leagues that young high school students, junior high students can strive to achieve, and it's a stepping stone to the NHL. And we don't have that across the country in basketball. And I wonder if I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but like, you need to have something to strive for that's attainable, and playing in the NBA in the United States doesn't feel as attainable as watching guys on a regular basis play, even though they're not Canadian, but they're playing for the Toronto Raptors.
Exactly. Geographic location and home market is huge. And with one franchise in Canada, it makes it, I don't want to say tough, but an obstacle. But now the Raptors have become Canada's team. And right. I think Toronto's an excellent example, because it is a melting pot. In the last 20 years, that city has really, really grown from a diversification standpoint. Immigration has flooded it. It is cultured. You know, you think about pop culture, The Weeknd, Drake, countless others. So it is a city that has really propelled itself in all facets, and basketball is a beneficiary of one of them.
Well, I'm excited to hear Eugene's story, get to know him a little bit, and see what his thoughts for the future are. So let's welcome him on.
So welcome to the Title League podcast, Eugene Omorui. Eugene, how's your morning going?
My morning's going good. How's yours?
Oh, we're great, man. We're in Canada, maybe not in Toronto. We're on the East Coast in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Where are you calling from?
Downtown Toronto.
Downtown. And, you know, prior to you jumping on, I was talking about just the early days. I played basketball in Toronto before moving out east, and I just remember those battles with the Joseph brothers against the Father Henry Carr, and those big battles, and Toronto basketball really on the come up. And it was a little bit before your time, but I think you had mentioned that you used to go watch some of these games, and you could see the atmosphere, the competitiveness. What were those early days like for you, being a soccer player and kind of watching the basketball scene in Toronto just take off?
I live beside Henry Carr. I live in the neighborhood, and they'd have a tournament like in the early part of the season, and I remember just my friends always going to go watch, and then me just tagging along one day and seeing the atmosphere and seeing people go crazy. It was great seeing Joseph Rose, like you said, everybody coming to Early Bird. It was a big deal, and I was like, I want to be part of this one day. It was something that intrigued me, playing basketball also. It was something that drew my attention to basketball. So it was good. It was really, really good in the early days.
And those early days, for those that don't know, your mom and yourself emigrated to Canada when you were 1 year old. Yeah. Your dad and sister followed. So growing up in Canada, soccer was just the first choice. Was that based on coming from Nigeria, or was it just something that you gravitated towards early?
So coming to Canada, my sister being born, and then my dad coming over, he was more a soccer guy. He played soccer in Nigeria. So he would just always take me to the park and play soccer. And then I became really good over the years. And I took soccer really seriously. And then when I got to grade 10 is when I really took that leap and said, okay, I'm going to play basketball because I got too big. So me just taking that leap was a very
big. I can't see you as a number 9 on the field, like, with this body, man.
No. I was skinny back then, but yeah, I made a transition to basketball. I didn't look back since.
I think, you know, we were talking, just soccer is such an immigrant sport. Like, soccer is worldwide. Doesn't matter where you come from in the world, soccer unites us all. It's the sport that everybody gravitates. Definitely in North America, it's not nearly as popular as it is everywhere else in the world. But like my parents, my family came here from Lebanon. And again, like hockey was the sport that everybody around here wanted to watch, but our family was focused on soccer and playing soccer, and everybody played soccer, and you know, everybody wanted to make a national team. I think the difference between me growing up now and you growing up is that basketball now is like
our soccer.
Yeah, it is our hockey. Yeah. Is like the Canadian version of hockey. Like, we have more people now seeing themselves as professional basketball players. Feeling that.
For sure.
So you got big, you bulked up, you wanted to play basketball, you wanted to be a part of that hype. How did you know that you had this talent, that you could, it could be more than just something fun to play in high school?
Just my drive for the game, I would say. Just me being hungry to continue getting better and just continue grinding. Back in those days, a lot of people didn't believe that I could do it. So I took it personal, and I went to the gym in the morning, gym after school, gym during school, just to keep those reps up. And it brought me a long way, and I'm here today. So
I was just going to tie in because I grew up in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And I immigrated as a 13-year-old to Toronto with my mom and dad and my brother. And when we arrived in Toronto, the sports that I grew up playing in Zimbabwe, being in the Southern Hemisphere, similar to you in Nigeria, like basketball, football, baseball, hockey, we didn't play those sports in Africa.
No, for sure.
So
for sure.
I remember going to school the first day and kids are looking at me. I'm just this short little weird kid with a crazy accent, and I'm like, soccer, cricket, rugby, all tennis, swimming, track and field. And they're just like, nah. So I had to pick up a basketball. And I remember when I first picked it up, I mean, I loved it, but I sucked. I was brutal. I couldn't play. Yeah. I couldn't make a layup, but stuck to it. And that really is what drove me every single day to get better and better. So when you talk about being in the gym, I can relate to it. I didn't play at the level that you've already played at, but it taught me life lessons, teammates that became brothers. So can appreciate where you're coming from, man.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, so I have a real question here. You are the son of immigrant parents. I don't care where you're from. When you're a child of immigrant parents, it's like the same conversation. So how did you convince them that you didn't need a real job? Like, you didn't need to go and become a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer or how did that conversation go?
There was many conversations. They wanted me to focus on school. My parents are school oriented, so they don't really play and joke around with it. So in the early days, they didn't let me play sports. They let me play soccer on Saturdays, but that was about it. Just focusing on school. Then I had to show them how much I wanted it. So we put a goal together, and just me having to get good grades to be able to do these things and play basketball, and just me grinding for it. That's when I really found my passion for basketball, because me going hard in school, me doing all the right things, cleaning the house, just to be able to go play and work out was a big deal. So just me taking that step really showed them that, okay, he wants it. And when the school started calling in like 11th, 12th grade, they had no choice. They just started letting me go and letting me really focus on basketball also. So, yeah, that really helped.
They realized it was a vehicle to an education.
Yeah.
So now when you look back, I think I moved here at 13. You moved here at 1. It's a huge difference.
Mm. Yeah.
But even at 13, I was pretty naive to the situation that my mom and dad had sacrificed so much for my brother and I to come to Canada.
No, for sure.
My mom was working multiple jobs, going back to school to do her nursing. My dad was working minimum wage. And, you know, you're a kid, so you don't really realize it. Now I look back and I'm like, they made the ultimate sacrifice. Do you see the same thing with both your mom and dad?
Yeah, for sure. My mom, when we first got to Canada, she told me after I grew up, obviously, she told me that she would work. She would work and go to school at the same time. And just her hunger to just want to have a better life for us was her drive. And us coming to Canada, she would go to school and work and then come home and take care of us. So she had a lot going on her plate. And I feel like that's where I got my drive from. And then my dad coming and doing the same thing just wanting to make the perfect family. And that's where I learned that you got to fight for what you want. And no matter what, you can get what you believe in. And you, with the hard work and dedication to your goals, you could definitely get it. You just got to take your time and get it one by one.
You guys have sort of this a similar story to us, only it was like one generation before me. So like my your parents, Kurt's parents, you all had an education and you had careers and you had to come here and then they had to recertify. So when my dad came here, my dad had like maybe grade 8 education. They didn't have the money. They had too many kids and they didn't have the money to send them to school. Only one, my Uncle George, he was the only one that got to be the smart one and go to university. And so they came here. So it was sort of like the reverse. Like my family stayed in Lebanon and my grandfather came here because this is where you could work and make some money, and he'd send money back over. And I don't think that people realize that the long-lasting effects have when you're separated from one of your parents. So like so how old were you when your dad came back or came here? Were there any years that you, was there a lot of time in between you and your mom coming and then your dad coming over?
Yeah, I was like 5 or 6 when my dad came. I started school already, but my dad always made it mandatory to check up on us and always call on a daily basis just to make sure that we were doing okay. He knew that my mom had a lot going on her plate, so just to make sure we were okay before coming down. It was a big deal.
Not to get too far away from basketball, but maybe it ties in. Who was your community when you came here? Like who supported your mom? Who supported you guys? And I don't mean financially, I mean emotionally. Like you're coming here, brand new country, you don't know anyone. What was that like growing up?
Yeah, I'd say our church supported us really. Different families in our church really took us under their wing. My mom going to the church in Nigeria and then coming here. The pastor really took us under his wing, and just different families taking us under their wing. And that allowed for me to meet other kids and meet other families. And with my mom going to work, I'd have to stay with some other families. So just going through that, really, those were the people I would say that supported us when we first got to Canada. I
love that. It's amazing. That's the beauty of Canada. We're a melting pot. It's just the diversification has been amazing. So
no, for sure.
I want to now move into, you know, the stuff that people want to know. And before we really get into that, I just want to give a special shout out to Coach Chris for lining this interview up, and Miss Lisa Washington, who is a great friend of mine, who introduced me to Coach Chris, because without them, we're not sitting here today having a conversation with Eugene. So shout out to Coach Chris and Lisa. We appreciate you.
Yep.
Eugene, you went to Orangeville Prep. It's no secret that this is it was really the first premier prep program in Canada to rival young student athletes going to the U.S. Obviously, the likes of Jamal Murray, Thon Maker. When you got there, there was a lot of high-profile players there. Did you find it strange to, or maybe difficult to fit in because you weren't the top dog? Were you still looked at as the underdog?
Yeah, I was definitely looked at as an underdog. I've been looked at as the underdog for many years, and that's just the drive I have to continue being competitive and showing that I fight for what I believe. And if you believe in yourself, you could achieve anything in this world. And that's how I see it. And that's how my parents taught me how to be. So just me getting to Orangeville, stepping on campus there, it was a big deal for me. I left my family, left my friends.
And Orangeville is no Rexdale or Toronto. Tell the listeners how different it is.
Yeah, you in the forest. You're in the forest with it. So just having to learn that experience and learning how to do things on your own and really becoming a young adult before your time was a big deal for me. And I really liked it. And I really loved it. I liked the peace and quiet up there. It was really good. It allowed me to focus. So just getting there was a big thing for me. And I wanted to prove to those guys that I belonged. So.
There's a reference now. You can say it's like being in Schitt's Creek. There's a reference now that the world can identify. It's like you're in the middle of nowhere in a small town.
No, for sure.
Only on the show they didn't make it seem like you were in the woods. I know that you were actually in the woods.
We were in the woods. We were definitely in the woods.
It's different up there. Shout out to Jesse Tipping, the whole Tipping family for
Shout out to them.
So, you know, we won't talk too much about Rutgers, but at Oregon, you just came off your first tournament appearance, unfortunate loss in the Sweet 16, but you've been hooping, you know, first team, all Pac-12, leading the team in scoring, and now you've declared for the NBA draft. What has the last 12 months been like for you, man?
Just determination, focus, knowing that I'm closer to one of my ultimate goals. Just having the hunger and knowing that as a senior, I got to fight for what I want. Graduating also motivated me this year. So
congrats.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Just having to sit down and reflect on my goals and wanting to knock them out one by one. I wrote them down and I was just positive about everything and I knew I could do it. So just sitting down, talking to my family, and just having that same hunger I had when I first started basketball was a big thing for me. So just me settling this year and locking in really helped me come the year I had this year.
What's your degree?
Political science with a minor in criminology.
Nice. We'll talk Thank offline you. About that. That'll be a whole other episode that would bore the sports fans.
For sure.
But your path to Oregon was definitely not a straight path. There was some obstacles in the way. Was your red shirt year between Rutgers and Oregon in the right during the start of the pandemic?
I think it was right before the pandemic. Yeah, you're right. It was definitely right before the pandemic. Me having to go to Oregon and just cleaning up my knee a bit, just getting there and really trying to work with the staff, working on form shooting because I couldn't really jump yet. So just working on form shooting and just settling in on my game, watching film with the coaches and learning a different aspect of basketball that I didn't really know before was a big key about all the film you got to watch, about different plays you got to know. And just me doing that, I think elevated my game to the next level.
Do you think the pandemic actually maybe helped you then, having that year where, you know, obviously we're still in it, don't want to disregard that, but the whole NCAA came to a standstill. There was a lot of uncertainty. A lot of seniors at the time didn't know what they were going to be doing, where you had this whole year not only to recover and prepare, but nothing was really happening. So it was like the world was on pause. Did you see it as an advantage or a disadvantage?
I mean, I was going to redshirt regardless. It wasn't really about if the pandemic was happening or not. So, but the way that year ended, I feel like that just motivated me even more to come out and compete at the highest level. I would say that. So I would say an advantage because I know those guys really wanted to go to the tournament last year. So we had to get it done this year. And just seeing the happiness those guys had winning the conference last year, I told myself I was going to get it this year. And like I said, just knocking out my goal and I continue to do it. So just staying locked in and dedicated.
What steps do you take now? Like I don't know. Kurt knows all this, but I don't know how any of this works. So you want to declare, do you get yourself an agent? Has that been something that you've done or what was that process like?
Yeah, right now we're still looking between different agents. So we haven't decided yet, but we will decide it soon. So we're just taking this time, me and my family, just to really reflect and just learn the other side of things. So we're taking it step by step right now.
Right, because you've pretty much mastered, you know, the player aspect, but then there's the whole business side of it too. What are some of the conversations that you have? What are things that you look for or worry about when it comes to who's going to represent you or how you move into the business part of basketball?
Just remaining, just talking to the family and just learning things that we didn't know about before. Because when it comes to basketball, there's many new things that you don't know happens behind the scenes. So just getting this learning aspect out of things. So like when it comes to me, my family, and my best friend, like my close circle. So just being able to learn the business side of things that I didn't know before is key. And I think I feel like I am still learning. So I do take it step by step because I don't know the whole process yet. But soon I'll definitely know the whole process.
The draft is in July. You've got, you know, it's closely approaching. You just recently declared, so I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
You've got all of Oregon Nation behind you. You've got Canadians behind you. Tons of fans. So we're all rooting for you now in preparation for this draft. you know, it's easy to get caught up with the draft boards and all that nonsense, but ultimately your game speaks.
Yes, for sure.
So you're in Toronto. Toronto's in this lockdown. How are you managing navigating through this and getting your reps in, getting the work in as you prepare for this big, big moment?
Just staying in shape. Just really locking down on my goal and just knowing what I want right now and what I got to do to get there. So just staying in shape, getting my reps up, getting some shots up, and just focusing on showing different aspects of my game when it comes to that time.
Do you have a plug for the gym? A coach? Because it's hard to find gym time when things are locked down.
Nah, for sure. Just me and coach getting our gym. They have their own gym that we use, private gym. So just me and coach Chris, putting in that time to continue getting better. So
amazing. So yeah, what are going to be your next steps now? As far as it's not a traditional year, we don't have the combine in Chicago. We don't have all these draft workouts where you're flying all across the country. It's very different. A lot of it's done virtually. Has that process already started, or do you know when it will be starting?
I believe it's going to start next month. So just once I found my agent and we decide as a family, I plan on going back to the U.S. in a few weeks and just locking in and going to compete and just working hard in different workouts and different teams come into the gym, just putting on a performance that they enjoy, hopefully, and just continue chasing after my goals one by one.
You know, this is like this is another combine that's canceled. There's across sports and in basketball, there's been a number that haven't happened since the pandemic started. And I'm not a huge football fan, but somebody had shared something on social media that it was Tom Brady, and he was like reflecting on what coaches were saying and critics were saying about him during his combine, which is that he was too skinny, he wasn't fast enough. It was like there was nothing positive about how he performed in that combine, and now he's undoubtedly one of the greatest, if not the greatest, football player of all time. So, do you think that like the pandemic and has sort of, and the lack of combines or the cancellation of combines have made people reprioritize the importance of them, or you know, like we have a lot, there's a lot of people, you're older, right? But I was there's players in the league right now who are defining, who are showing, like LeBron James, number one, it doesn't matter how old you are. He's a lot older than you, but like age is irrelevant. How many players do we have that are undrafted that are signing, you know, great contracts, improving, like all these benchmarks that we've had over the years? I feel like particularly in this last year with the pandemic, but also in the last few years, it's like none of it matters anymore. What you show, Kurt said it, it's like what you deliver on the court, what you're showing, none of those things seem to matter anymore. So do you think that we're pushing them away, or will it ultimately always be decided in those areas? If that makes sense.
I wouldn't say we're pushing them away. I feel like it will ultimately be decided. I just feel like getting players coming into the NBA, everyone's good. Everyone's respected from their schools in different ways. So everyone coming to the NBA, it's not like they're not good. They're all good. So it's just a grind. You got to have to go out there and compete. And teams will find you if you show up with your game. So that's how I continue to motivate myself and how I continue to stay locked in. Just me being the competitor I am and just understanding that you're going after someone else's job. So just staying true to yourself and just remaining locked in is the most key part for me when it comes to this type of process. And like you said, me being an older guy, I understand is that with me, I'm very installed with confidence, especially after watching my teammate Payne last year. Just really learning the confidence side of things and just going out there and playing your game and not really thinking too much about it.
If you let things like that get in the way, your story on the basketball side would have stopped a long time ago. That's the underdog in you, always fighting. You know, so many people get caught up in all of the stuff. Oh, you know, where's the upside? It's like, no, you've got an NBA body. You're ready. You're mature. You are a man coming into a man's league, as opposed to these young, you know, one and done freshmen. And I wanted to touch on that. at Oregon, how did you play that role from a leadership standpoint? Because there's a huge difference between someone who's just turned 19 and someone who's just turned 24. It's not a big difference in age, but from a maturity level, significantly different. How did you play that role there?
Just taking that leadership role, accepting the role that Coach Allen put me in was a very big thing for me. And just having that competitive nature, I mean, just installing with the next guys and just allowing them to see that it's not about how you look. It's not about, I mean, if you look completely goofy and you're playing hard, it shows something more than you just trying to look cool on the court. At the end of the day, we're all trying to win the game. So just doing the little things and just showing them that you don't have to necessarily score to do something to impact the game. You can do the little things, and that can help you on the offensive side. So just me taking that leadership role and just installing the guys with confidence and just knowing that I got their back and they got my back. And
how are you? And what about from just a cultural standpoint, you know, music, fashion, you know, TikTok, all of these different things, you know, like what do you think of this next generation of young talent coming through? Because you were the leader on that team, but at the same time, you want to stay hip, relevant. Did you notice a big difference between the freshmen and yourself?
No, I'll say the freshmen are really cool, really chill. All of them, freshmen, sophomores, everyone's very chill at Oregon. We're all a brotherhood, and we didn't look at age as a factor. We just all stuck together. It was like big brother, little brother type of vibe. So I feel like I was able to talk to them and they would listen, and just for them to accept that and just for me to know that they have my back the way I have their back was a big thing for me and allowed for me to go on the court and do what I have to do. So
the man's only 24. He's not old like you. Okay. You're asking how he stays hip. He's hip. He's 24.
Yo, 24 and 19. Sure. I know these freshmen.
Kurt getting confused thinking you're an old man like he is. You're not. Yeah. He knows how to use TikTok. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm dead. So as you grew up in Toronto, the Raptors won in 2019. We can't ignore the fact that that was a huge step for Canadian basketball. Were you a Raptors fan growing up?
Yeah, for sure. If you live in Toronto, you're a Raptors fan growing up. My parents didn't really have the financial, weren't financially stable to get me tickets though, but just watching on TV almost every night and just watching how fans really enjoyed and got into the game. And I feel like when they won the chip, I was back home and just seeing the city come together and everyone on the streets coming outside. I was downtown, so just coming outside and watching them win and everybody enjoying like it was college really even made me more happier. It made me want to even drive harder to continue getting to my goals and just going out there and competing. So that was a big deal for me. And I was just happy they won. It was a big thing for the city and allowed for young kids to really understand that if you want it, you can go get it. So
what did you think of that series? I mean, you were in Toronto. I feel like the general consensus was, we're so close, but are we actually going to win? And game by game, it started to become closer and closer to a reality. What was the vibe like in the city and just for you being so close to it? Was it inspiring to you to see like this team that you grew up watching and all the hard years, and we won't go through the names of, you know, we had some questionable teams at times. So for them to finally come full circle and win the chip and get that, you know, get the monkey off our back was huge. So tell us about just you being around it and obviously being in the city when they won.
Yeah, it was a big deal. I was very happy for them. Everyone coming together with a diversity, with such a big diversity, multicultural city that we live in Toronto, is just everyone coming down. People coming from Vancouver, Alberta. So just everyone coming down from all around Canada was such a big deal. And I feel like it allowed for the Raptors to really feel loved and really understand that it's not a whole city behind them, but a whole country. And that's why I said it was like a college atmosphere, people running on the streets, going crazy. We don't really have a big college team, and there's no really like, it's not like NCAA, like March Madness. So just them having the fans there going crazy downtown was a big deal. And I feel like that's what really threw them over the edge and really gave them the strength that they needed with such great group of fans behind them. So I loved every moment about it. And I want to be in that predicament one day. So that just motivated me more, I would say, and just wanted to come out this season and showcase my game.
It was definitely a whole country behind them. You know, we were, you know, cheering out on the East Coast and recreating Jurassic Park.
For sure.
I mean, our production guy, I just want you to know that when you made the comment, I grew up in Toronto, so everybody's a Raptors fan. Our boy in production was shaking his head no, because he's a Warriors fan, even though. But I'm a firm believer, and he'll argue with me. I just think he likes to be different. I don't know.
Yeah.
He was an OG Raptors fan before everyone jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, for sure. I know those ones.
Yeah, because then everyone was a Raptors fan. But who was there in the dark days, you know, when we're getting bounced by Paul Pierce in the first round and LeBron every other year? So
yeah, for sure.
It is. It's like, you know, it makes a big difference when you only have one team in a league.
Mm-hmm.
You feel connected to them. And definitely, like, when I look back or when I start to research and I see how many organizations have not won championships. So that really, as a baby, we are still a baby organization.
For sure.
You know, to have that championship is a big deal. And you do. You have a whole country behind you. People who weren't basketball fans became basketball fans, and maybe it's all bandwagon, and maybe the OG Raptors fans like don't want it. But I mean, love is love, really.
For sure.
And I think that, you know, that team, even though that team as it was doesn't exist anymore, they feel like family to us.
Yeah.
And that's something that sports does in a way that no other, like, genre of something. Like, I'm a huge music fan, but I don't walk around thinking that The Weeknd's my family, right? No matter how much I know about him or how much I love him or, right? Like there's, you know, I love fashion, but I'm not looking at Louis Vuitton and thinking that he's, you know, that house of fashion belongs to me or that I'm a part of it. But when you look at sports and you look at your teams and the teams that you cheer for, those players feel like family. You celebrate as if they were your own, and you mourn when there's a loss as if they were your own.
For sure.
Which is something that's really remarkable, I think. And, you know, sports also can make us hate each other. There's been lots of, like, no physical fights at my dining room table over sports, but definitely a lot of it's like we got to a point where you can't talk politics, you can't talk religion, and you can't talk sports teams at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. Those were like those three things needed to be kept, you know, off so that we could just have peace and enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, for sure.
But doesn't that, like, how does that make you as a player, you as a professional player, how does that make you feel being a part of something like that?
It made me feel special. It made me feel happy just for the city. A lot of cities don't get to be in that predicament. So just everyone coming together and really cheering on those guys is a big thing. And like you said, it really, you can't really say The Weeknd's your family, even though you're a big fan.
I mean, I'd love for him to be my family. So, I want to be in that family, but it's not the same.
Yeah, so, for sure. So just knowing that those Raptors, how much they meant to us during that time was very big. And even my grandma would be watching the game and jumping around. So it was a very good moment, a very good time. So yeah.
Recently, Canadian that we're connected to, Ken Burch from Montreal, just signed with the Toronto Raptors. And you know, he's been in the league for the last 4 years playing with the Magic. But now that he's a Raptor, there's just a different level that of notoriety that comes with that. He's a Canadian. He plays for Team Canada. He's repping Canada on his back both ways with the Raptors and Team Canada. Is there any nostalgia or just desire of, you know, one day I want to put on that red jersey? Or for you, is it different?
I don't really think too much about that at the moment. My goal is to just get into the NBA and work hard and continue getting better day by day. When I started taking on my jotting down my goals when I was in grade 10, I had playing for my country as a goal up there. But
when you say playing for your country, is that Nigeria or Canada?
So it could be either one. It's just which one I feel at the moment. And I want to first work hard to get the job that I need, and just to provide for my family, not just for myself, but for my family, for my village back home in Nigeria. So just doing that first, I had that jotted down before representing my country. So just knocking out my goals one by one. I'm a firm believer in knocking out the goals one by one and just not getting too ahead of myself and knocking out something before the other. Just taking time and knocking out one by one is a big thing for me.
Sidney Crosby's from here and was a huge Montreal Canadiens fan growing up, like obsessed with Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, when he first started playing really high competitive, would be like, I want to play for the Canadiens. I want to play for. And let me tell you, he signed with Pittsburgh and he has no problem beating the shit out of the Canadiens anytime they match up on the ice.
Yeah, for sure.
The job and the loyalty and all of that kind of. Now, he wears his Canadian jersey with pride when it's Olympics, for sure. Right? Like,
yeah.
But yeah, like that, you can love them like family and then have no problem beating them if somebody else is signing the checks.
Competitor.
When the ball goes up, it's different.
but
competitor.
Talking about that, this dual identity going back into your cultural piece, your history, a lot of people don't. So I think that that's what sets us apart from the United States.
Yeah.
I say this all the time. I have family who have gone to the United States. I have family who immigrated to the U.S. the same time that my family immigrated here. And it's like they don't even realize that they're Lebanese. Like the United States is very, once you come here, it's about being American first. It's about being American first. And something that is beautiful about Canada is that you're allowed to keep both. You're allowed, you're encouraged to keep to keep both. And I don't like, for the people who listen in the States, I don't want to give the impression that we're this perfect country. We're not. We have racism. We have systemic racism. We have prejudices. This is not, but one thing that we do really well is encouraging people to retain their heritage and be proud of their heritage. So when you talk about what country you're going to represent, is there like a debate in your mind? Can you do both? Is there, like, would you pick Nigeria because they'd need it more than Canada? Or like, because I think that if I had the, just I'll answer my own question. If I had the ability to play any sport competitively, I'd want to do it for Lebanon because, like, Lebanon doesn't have it. Like, there's enough in Canada that can do it. But, like, in Lebanon, I want to help them out. I don't know if that question makes sense. But, like, do you know what I mean?
It definitely makes sense. But the way I see it is they both countries have helped me in both different ways. So Nigeria is my root, is who I am. And as a person, is how I was brought up. While Canada is the country that took me and my family in and really saved us. So it could go either way. I'll just say I want to knock out this goal before I knock out that goal, and just really taking time and just making the decision I believe and firmly believe is a big thing for me, because when it comes to making decisions like that, I like to sit down. Family is the most important thing to me, and just hearing them out and hearing what they believe and what they think I should do is key and is the route I always go. So I hope that answered your question.
I love that. So
I'm with it. And shout out to another Nigerian that we've had on the show, in Mr. Josh Okoji. Josh plays for the Timberwolves, he's representing Team Nigeria. So I think it's just, I'm not sure if you know him or if you've had a chance to connect with him, but it's probably
he's a cool dude.
Soon to come.
Yeah. Now, I haven't connected him. I hope to connect with him one day, but I haven't connected him so far.
Hopefully in an NBA uniform playing against him or with him.
For sure.
Support for today's show comes from Locker Room, the best place to talk sports. When I'm watching a game, whether it's my favorite team, casually watching, or my favorite player, I want to jump into the game and join the conversation. For me, it's Twitter, but oftentimes I'm drowned out in the conversation. With Locker Room, I can be in the same room with passionate sports fans from around the world talking about the game that we love. Locker Room is the first live audio platform built just for sports fans. On Locker Room, you can create and join live conversations with your favorite fans, athletes, and insiders. Whether you're reacting to breaking news, starting a watch party for a big game, or debating who should win MVP, Locker Room is the best place for live conversations about sports. Download Locker Room for free today on the Apple App Store. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. So, speaking about the what Trish just said, let's build on that. You've had the advantage of being born in one continent, living in another, and you've gone back to visit Nigeria, you know, not as a one-year-old. You've been able to go back to your hometown and see it grown and to understand the differences between living in the first world and living in the developing world.
Mm-hmm.
And then playing in the U.S. In two completely different states. We're living in a world now that's just divided. There's hatred. It is maybe worse than it's ever been, or there's just a bigger spotlight on it. What mm-hmm. can you say about just your experiences, seeing it on both sides, in Nigeria, seeing it here in Canada and in the U.S.? What can we be doing better as a people?
Just coming together and just helping everyone out the same way you would help your family out. Just everyone just showing the love for one another without being separate. No matter what country you come from, no matter your skin color, just always coming together and just all loving each other. Me, I'm a firm believer in just loving everyone around me and just showing love to the people that support me. Also helping those that do need my help and that are in need, such as Africa, Society of My Own Foundation, to help those kids back there and different families was a big thing for me. Just, I feel like just doing the little things to make everybody feel loved is a big thing.
You launched your foundation, and that's incredible, especially for someone that is as young as you and with so Thank much you. More ahead of you. What's big for me is to go back to Zimbabwe. There's so much that I want to give back. And a lot of people who have never left the Western world don't understand how hard it is in other places mm-hmm. in the world. You know, we take for granted the fact that you can turn on a light switch and power always comes on. Turn the tap yeah. and clean water comes out. The opportunity sure. is not necessarily there in other places. So speak to us about your foundation and what is the goal of the foundation for those that are just finding out about it for the first time and how they can support it.
Just partnering with family members and just being able to give back through the Godson Foundation, just giving back to kids, cutting, giving them haircuts, food, a little bit of money, clothes, different basketball, soccer ball, footballs, just to give them that stuff. I believe that every child should have. Me as a child, I was able to play around and just joke around, go to the park. But in Nigeria, there's not a lot of parks. No, you can't really do that in certain neighborhoods. So just allowing for them to feel like a child and just feel loved and wanted was a big thing for me. And just wanting to give back to those families and allow for them to have food on the table at nighttime. Not everyone is in the position I am today. So me always knowing that, I wanted to give back and just show that that's what's on my mind and that those are who I care about. At the end of the day, I love playing basketball, but I want to be able to provide for other families and help them out, because I feel like God has put me in this position for a reason. And that's been my goal since I was a child. Just the hunger my mom had coming to Canada, helping us, providing for us, putting food on our table, and still trying to give back to people back home. It showed me that nothing is too little, nothing is too big. Just want to fight for them, not just for yourself.
There's so much that we can do to give back. You know, you can pay it forward in many different ways.
Yeah, and for sure.
When I think of Nigeria, I think of some of the leaders that have come out of there. Coming from Zimbabwe, I looked up to Nelson Mandela, and I think mm-hmm. of a modern day Mandela is Masai Ujiri, the president of the Toronto mm-hmm. Raptors. He's Nigerian. He's done so much to give back through his foundation, Giants of Africa, and has been a real role model for any young individual that's looking to affect change. So
yeah,
what you're doing, the future is so bright, because that, you know, who is Eugene Omorui going to be long term? Mm-hmm. What's the legacy sure. that you're going to leave and impact? So mm-hmm. when you think of that question, what is the legacy that you want to leave behind, you know, 20 years from now? You're all about goal setting. What is that legacy?
Just leaving my mark and just my legacy. I would love to be just being able to always give back, no matter how big you get, always remaining humble, always still believing in your goals and just not being afraid of no one, being a competitor that I am, and just not believing that you got too big for the moment, just being able to get to your goals and still help those ones in need. And just allowing for people to learn from that and wanting to do the same, I feel like is key in my legacy, just being a stepping stone for many others and many kids to grow up and learn that to give back is not, shouldn't be hard. It should be something that you want to do. So I feel like that's what I want my legacy to be seen as.
I love that so much. You are a good man, Eugene. You're a good man. Your parents raised you very well.
Thank you.
I think all the time, you know, just the things that we take for granted, like, you know, if I'm hungry and I don't have anything to eat, I can either go to the grocery store and, like, there's food on the shelves and I can buy it. Or I can, like, call up a food delivery service and have whatever I want delivered to me. And, like, we come from places who currently, you know, they don't have that luxury. You can't go to the, you can go to the grocery store, but the shelves are empty, right?
Empty,
like,
for sure.
Like the easy, like this. And I always think our parents, our families struggled so that to give us the opportunity that we have, right? And going back to making fun of your parents wanting you to have a real job, because that's an immigrant story, because the immigrant parents sacrifice so much so that we could come and make something of ourselves,
right? For them,
it was being a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer, or at least in my family, that's what it was. But it's the bottom line is to have a better opportunity. And so I really think that us as kids of immigrants, or young immigrants, our goal should be is to give back to those who didn't. Like, to, that's how you validate your parents' sacrifice and your family's sacrifice. You do good personally, Eugene. Mm-hmm. You have goals. You're meeting those goals. You're grinding. You're getting where you need to go. But then the second part to that is you give back. And you say thanks to those who didn't have the opportunity that you had. And I don't know. I just think that is the best legacy that you could leave. I'm 100% with you.
Thank you.
We're closing up on time. I have a few more things for you.
Yeah.
So I've seen you play. I've watched lots and lots of highlights. You can flat out ball. You know.
Thank you.
If no one knew, they know now. So
come
draft night, if your name is called, obviously it's a dream come true. If your name is not called, that moment won't define you. How will you prepare yourself mentally to handle the result that comes on draft night?
I always have the underdog mindset, and that's how I approach everything I do in life. I feel like that's what defines a true man, and just having the hunger that I have and just want to get to that stage, and no matter how I get there, just being able to still have that fight and that dog in me. The same way I started basketball, it wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy road to get where I am today. I had to work. I'm a firm believer in work and just wanting to hit the different things out the way and just continue going no matter what obstacles thrown at me. Like my parents always preached to me growing up, God gives his toughest battles to his toughest soldiers. So I feel like the different obstacles being thrown at me is just God's way of testing me and just me wanting him for me to go harder. And that's the way I see it.
And when you're on an NBA roster, how will you carve out your identity? What will be your strategy? Because once you get to the league, there's always the right fit. Finding a way to make an impact. And sometimes it's difficult to just stay mentally ready. This game, you know, recently we had Miles Turner from the Pacers on, and I think he said it's 95% mental or 99% mental, because how do you stay ready and not get discouraged? You know, you may see spot minutes or you may go in and have a huge impact because someone got injured. How do you stay ready for that moment?
I feel like it's my mindset and just being hungry and coming in there and working hard. And just fighting for what I believe in, and just doing me, playing my game, not getting out of my bubble, not trying to impress, just going out there and doing the little things first and showing why I deserve to have a spot on a team. So that's how I approach everything, and just having that dedication to continue working harder and just getting better day by day. with any organization that takes me, just showing them that he's hungry, he's confident, and he wants it. And anything that it takes to win, he's down to do it. So that's
if,
how I
if
see
you're
it.
Taking, if Eugene's on your team, you're going to win in many different ways.
For sure.
I love
for
it.
For sure.
And thank just you. Out of curiosity for me, tell us about Broke Baby. What does that mean to you, and what is the Broke Baby family?
Broke Baby is more us growing up, me and my brothers, us growing up and just not having money. Growing up in the inner city, not having money, and just still going to the gym and grinding no matter what, without food in our stomach, still going to the gym and grinding. And just having that Broke Baby mindset, just not having no money and just wanting to make money to take care of our family and just take care of each other and just always having each other's back. And just having that mindset, that hunger, and us also focusing on going to school and different things, different aspects that a lot of kids really weren't thinking about at that age. And just us writing down our goals, me and my friends were the ones that firmly believed that writing down the goals is going to help you achieve many things. And I feel like us doing that really helped us out.
Do we have some Broke Baby merch coming down the line?
How can
we support the movement?
I'm going to put it on my Instagram. We're going to have some merch coming up soon. I'm just focused on the present situation going on in my hand right now, and just focus on how to get on the team.
Amazing.
I end each show with three really fun non-basketball related questions. So if you're ready to give me the first answer that comes to mind, I'll jump
all
right
right
in. Okay.
I got you.
All right. If you were to write your autobiography today, what would you call it?
I would probably call it The Diary of a Young Kid from Rexdale, Ontario, Canada.
Nice. Okay. And who would you get to play you in the movie?
To play me? That's a real good question. Who would I get to play me? I don't know, you know. I don't know who I'd get to play me. I'd probably get one of my friends to play me because they'll know me the most. And nice. Just that'd be probably easier for them to really act it out.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, and which TV show, either past or present, do you relate to the most?
Do I relate to the most? Past or present.
And it can be anything. It doesn't need to be basketball. It could be just like this show reminds you of your friends, you and your friends, or this show reminds you of your family, or...
I would say Last Chance U. Basketball and just seeing the hunger they have in the show and just seeing what they go through. I still remember me going through that and just continue fighting. So, and that's what I see them doing. So you guys, I would say that really connects to me the most.
I love the Diary of a Young Kid from Rexdale. Do you have any shout outs, anyone you want to show love to before we close?
Shout out to my family. Shout out to God. Shout out to Oregon. Shout out to Rutgers. Shout out to the Broke Baby. And shout out to you guys.
We appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
We're rooting for you. We can't wait to see what comes next in your life. I think
thank
that
you.
You are positioned so well to succeed regardless. And from what I've learned, you've surrounded yourself with amazing people that will elevate you and get you to the next level. So we'll be supporting on draft night, and we'll be supporting after draft night.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You got fam on the East Coast now, Eugene.
I got you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Keep putting in that work, and all the best, man. We'll be in touch.
Yeah. Thank you.